One of Edna Lewis's deepest friendships was with another chef, Scott Peacock. They bonded over a commitment to Southern food, they wrote a cookbook together, and for the last years of her life, lived together. So after talking to lots of people about Miss Lewis's reach in the world, we also wanted to know what it was like to be standing next to her in the kitchen. So hi, Scott. Great to talk with you.
Great to talk with you, Frances.
So this is so fun to get to speak with you because we've been talking about Miss Lewis in all these different angles and all these different directions, but I get to talk with you about cooking with her. So what was it like cooking with Edna Lewis?
That's a great question. It was, it was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful. And it was similar, but yet utterly unlike cooking with anyone else. It could be very chatty and laughter-filled, but for the most part, it was very quiet. But it was quiet because we were both so focused on what we were doing. And I think maybe some of our most present when we were cooking together. That's what it was like. I mean, the very first time I ever cooked with her, I was asked to be her assistant when she came for a Southern food dinner in Atlanta many, many years ago. I was in my 20s, and she was 74. And I met her at the train station. She didn't fly at the time, didn't like to fly. And she traveled down from New York, and she had come down to do the breads and desserts for one of those dinners, you know, where you have a bunch of chefs cooking a different course and raising money for the American Institute of Wine and Food and raising awareness about Southern food, which was not taken very seriously at all at the time and was far, far, far from the popular cuisine that it is today. And so I was asked to be her assistant, which I was thrilled. The year before, she had come and cooked at a similar dinner, and I tried to assist her then and had been utterly unsuccessful, but had met her, which was profound for me and of which she had absolutely no memory. but then the next year, I didn't even realize she was coming, and I got a phone call and was asked, would I like to be her assistant? And I couldn't believe it. You know, I was literally almost jumping up and down and went to meet her at the train station and looked all up and down the track, the platform. And finally, as everyone else had cleared down at the far, far end of the track, I saw her approaching, and she was leaning forward and dragging this very large cardboard box. And I went running down to her, and in the box, she had pie dough, and she knew there wouldn't be time to make pie dough for 100 pies when she got there. So she had made the pie dough in New York and frozen it and wrapped each individual batch in wax paper and aluminum foil. And we got those into the car and got them secured in a refrigerator where they thawed perfectly, of course, by the next day when it was time to start working with that. And we went to the market and shopped for peaches and rhubarb and blackberries and pecans and other things that were needed. And then the next day, we set about cooking. And she went to me and said, you know, will you start rolling out the pie dough? And I was a little intimidated, to say the least, and asked her to show me what she wanted. And later, she said to someone, she said, you know, I couldn't believe it. They gave me this child to roll out all the pie dough. I was scared to death. And so we made cobblers and pies for the next 2 days, and biscuits and cornbread. And then the dinner was that evening, but it was quiet, but it was the most satisfying quiet, you know, and so much was conveyed in the silence. And I'll say that she, even before she really knew me, she never treated me like a student. You know, she was interested in what I thought. It didn't have that tutorial quality. She was generous, and she loved cooking so much, and she loved that someone else was interested in it so much. And it was like an offering. Yeah, it was extraordinary. And so then after that first time, it was a few months later that once we'd started corresponding and talking and visiting, I'd been to New York to see her once, and she called me and proposed that she come to Atlanta for a week and that we just cook just for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so we did for that entire week. You know, I would go and pick her up. She was staying with friends of mine, and you know, she would, I was ready to get right into the kitchen and she would always say, have you had your coffee? And I would be like, yes, I've had plenty of coffee, but she would want to go sit and have coffee. And we would go to a cafe or somewhere and have coffee for a very long time. I mean, sometimes 3 hours. And then we would make our way to the kitchen and we would cook and we would cook late into the evening. And the first thing I did ask her, because the very first thing I'd ever had that she made, that original dinner that I had tried to get into the kitchen to help with, but unsuccessfully, I was lucky enough to attend, and she had made turtle soup. Turtle soup, I mean, I was frankly a little squeamish. Sure. It seemed kind of Granny Clampett to me a little bit. but I really had no idea what to imagine, but I was also very excited. I mean, it certainly was exotic. But I was not at all prepared, you know, for what was delivered to the table. And it was this clear, clear amber consommé that had this cloud, you know, floating on the top. And the fragrance was unlike anything. It was so complex and yet so simple, but so nuanced. And this cloud, this little dumpling that was floating on the top, that was the lightest thing you ever encountered. And that had bits of turtle meat and tiny leaves of fresh thyme folded into it. And it remains, you know, one of the most mysterious things that I ever, and delicious and memorable and meaningful now, things I ever tasted. And that experience was so interesting because I'd assumed, because it was so complex and nuanced and mysterious and ethereal, and adjectives fail me, but I just assumed there must be a multitude of ingredients and secret steps and, you know, spells. And instead, I mean, I went ahead and I had gotten the turtle meat and I was like, well, you know, what else do we need? And it was, you know, that was about it. I mean, we needed some sherry and turtle and some onion. And we put it in a pot with a vast amount of water, I thought, and put it on very low heat. And it cooked and cooked and cooked and cooked. And I can remember tasting it after about 3 hours or so and being, I didn't say this, of course, but I was disappointed. I mean, I thought it tasted like water. And I thought, this is not it. She's not going to give me this recipe. She's not going to really teach me how to do this, you know? And so I, you know, I was like, what do you think? And she said, it would just, you know, let's let it cook longer. And so we did. I mean, it cooked for hours. And she would add a little salt and put the lid back on after we tasted. And this went on for a while. And I could begin to taste a little something after a few hours, but I was still suspicious. And then all of a sudden, you know, it became. And it was. It was exactly what I had tasted that night. And it was extraordinary. And that was quite a lesson, you know, and then we made the dumplings, and then that really became that turtle soup remains very, it's symbolic, it's emblematic for me and very meaningful. So every time there was a special occasion or for her birthday or someone special was coming to visit, I would always, you know, if they were really special, then they would warrant turtle soup, you know.
Yeah. And that soup, the way you describe it, it's such a cooking of patience and a cooking of observation. And that's so much of what I think about when I think of Miss Lewis, not ever having eaten her food, only having read her writing. So much of the taste of country cooking is about observation, patience with the world, patience with the seasons.
Yeah. Patience and wonder. Her sense of wonder about things, you know, is what really always stands out to me. There was a real sophistication there of someone who was brilliant and sensitive and artistic and observant and had great savvy and, you know, and a degree of sophistication. And at the same time, there was always about her a girlish innocence that was so attractive and so powerful, really, that she could see the moon, and it was like she would get, it was like she had never seen the moon before. And I feel so old and jaded and have all my entire life, you know, but I try to to be like that. I want to be like that. And yeah. I guess in some ways I am like that. I mean, in the last week of her life, I mean, one of the last things I can remember was giving her pound cake at our kitchen table. And, you know, she gasped and said, beautiful. And
wow. What a gift.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Thank you, Francis.
Scott Peacock is a chef and teacher and the author, with Edna Lewis, of The Gift of Southern Cooking. And from that book, we have a recipe for cheese straws, and that's at splendidtable.org.